Good morning. May it please the court.
Yes, go ahead.
Ready to proceed?
Yes.
The appellant in this case, Ms. LaCaz, is serving a life sentence as a result of a conviction, second-degree murder conviction in Louisiana for the murder of her husband, Mike LaCaz. As the state court record fully reveals, the primary witness against Ms. LaCaz at that second-degree murder trial was Marilyn Robinson. Mr. Robinson was actually the person who shot and killed Michael LaCaz. And as both the Third Circuit Court of Appeal in Louisiana and the Louisiana Supreme Court and our federal district court concluded, there was an agreement, even if oral, even if not formal, but an understanding sought for by Mr. Robinson and confirmed by the prosecution through their investigator that led to his decision to cooperate and testify against Ms. LaCaz. There is, in other words, in both the state courts and the federal district court, a conclusions that there was a Brady violation because that agreement was not revealed to the defense at trial. The issue, of course, for us today is whether or not that Brady violation is material. Now, of course, I'm here today because the district court concluded, the federal district court, upon reviewing this properly exhausted claim, concluded that it was this understanding. And as you know, the understanding was that Mr. Robinson's son, who was either 14 or 16, I've seen both ages referenced in the record, and who drove him to Mr. LaCaz's house at the time of the murder and then drove him away, that he not be prosecuted or involved or anything done to him or used against him as a result of Mr. Robinson's cooperation. That is the agreement. That is the understanding. And that is, as the post-conviction record supports, based upon the testimony of both Mr. Robinson and his attorney, Michael Bonnet, that was the understanding that Mr. Robinson sought and was really a deal breaker, if you will, before he would agree to cooperate and testify against Ms. LaCaz at trial. That was not revealed to trial counsel. It never came up in trial. And more to the point, when the issue of why Mr. Robinson would lie, why would Mr. Robinson, who said, I shot Mike LaCaz because Mrs. LaCaz got into my head when we had an affair and made me do it. And it was her fault. This was my best friend of 20 plus years. I would have never shot him, but she got into my head and made me do it. Why would he lie? That was the whole issue at trial. Why would he lie? The only thing the defense had was that he was mad at Ms. LaCaz because she had had him arrested for stalking her. Beyond that, all we had was that he pled to manslaughter and at age 37 got a 40-year sentence. And as the prosecution argued to the jury, that was not much of a deal. In other words, the fact that he got a plea to manslaughter from second degree and still got what was effectively a life sentence, given that that was all that we knew about his motivation to lie and cooperate with the state, the prosecutor very effectively argued that was not much of a deal.
Why do you think the state courts decided it was not material?
Well, I think they misinterpreted Brady, Giglio, Napu, and Kyles, misapplied, if you will, unreasonably so for purposes of AEDPA, which, of course, is my burden to establish. But what I think happened is, first of all, recall that the Third Circuit Court of Appeal said this is a Brady violation, remand for a new trial. Then the state took writs, as they're certainly entitled to do, to the Louisiana Supreme Court. What I think the Louisiana Supreme Court did is basically provided a sufficiency of the evidence test, which Kyle says, when you're making this very complex contextual materiality determination in a context of a trial that's been had, and then this new exculpatory evidence comes to light. You don't simply look and say, well, if they had that, would she have been acquitted? No, the question is this evidence such that it gives us pause to have any confidence in the verdict? And then Kyles also teaches, you don't look and say, well, there's evidence to support the verdict, so there's no problem here, there's no materiality. And that's in essence what the Louisiana Supreme Court did. If you look at their ruling, they basically said, first of all, there was evidence of his bias because he pled guilty and got a reduced plea. But as I indicated, the prosecutor very effectively argued to the jury that was no deal. That was no motivation to lie because he essentially got the life sentence he would have gotten for second-degree murder. Secondly, the Louisiana Supreme Court says, well, there's evidence that Ms. Lacaze, through another witness, Mr. Simon Sarpy, I believe, that Ms. Lacaze knew that the murder weapon had been thrown in the river and had told him so. Well, I guess if you consider that evidence in the light most favorable to the government for sufficiency purposes, that's certainly evidence of guilt. But it's also consistent with Ms. Lacaze's testimony at trial, as well as the theory of the defense. And that is, she knew or believed that her husband, who was a rough-and-tumble cowboy and had a really bad kidney disease and did not want to go on the rest of his life having to sit in the living room on dialysis, that he wanted to die rather than do that, and that he concocted a plan with Mr. Robinson, his best friend of more than 20 years, to have him essentially assisted suicide. And her... And Mr. Robinson did kill him. And apparently, according to Simon Sarpy Simon's testimony, she knew after talking to Mr. Robinson that he had thrown the gun in the river. That is not evidence of guilt of second-degree murder. That is that she told Mr. Robinson, you've got to kill this man for me. It's evidence that she knew after the fact what happened to the gun. The second thing was that the Supreme Court relied upon in saying there's no materiality is that she basically made a statement to the effect, and she testified to this at trial. I knew from my conversations with Mike the night and morning before he was killed that he had figured out what he needed to do, that he didn't want to live this way. And I knew from my conversations with Mr. Robinson the next morning and the next day that their agreement was Mr. Robinson was going to kill him and that would be the assisted suicide, in effect, that Mike Lacaze wanted. Now, that what the Supreme Court points to, depending upon how you interpret it, supports her theory that she was not guilty of second-degree murder. She's just guilty of knowing that her husband wants to die, and he's figured out a way to have it accomplished through this assisted suicide. So they look at what evidence supports guilt when considered in the light most favorable to the government. That's sufficiency of the evidence test. That is contrary to and an unreasonable application of Kyles. And this is, I mean, all you have to do is look at your opinion in Robert Tassin's case. This is not just some witness who said something about the case. This is the key witness that makes the link between what happened and that it was Ms. Lacaze's idea and she did it for her own gain, not because she was worried about her husband's quality of life. He is the only evidence of that. The gun in the river that she knows about, the fact that she knows that her husband doesn't want to live his life on dialysis and would rather die, and that maybe Marilyn Robinson is willing to assist him in the suicide pact or whatever it is. That's not evidence of guilt of second-degree murder. The only evidence in the state's theory is totally dependent upon Marilyn Robinson's testimony and his credibility. I mean, when you've got that key witness's credibility, as the court said, and there's some promise, some assurance, some deal that's not given to cross-examine him on, to provide the motivation for why he would lie, for that jury to hear, and why he should not be believed and she should. When you don't have that, when there's a key witness, as the court said in NAPU, it doesn't matter if you could raise other issues regarding his credibility or his reason to lie. You don't have a fair trial.
But what do we do with the court holding that it was revealed to the jury? The determining that the agreement, by the combination of revealing that there was a plea agreement and what the deal was and its past criminal history, that it was revealed as a factual matter.
What was revealed to the jury, both based upon, you know, my reading of the transcript and what the courts have said, the only thing that was revealed to the jury was that he pled guilty to manslaughter, which is a reduced plea from second-degree murder, and that instead of getting a natural life sentence, he got a de facto 40-year life sentence, if you will. And the reason I call it that is because that's what the prosecutor told the jury it was in arguing that that's not motivation for him to lie or to not be believable.
But the sufficiency of the revelation was also part of the court's materiality determination. And isn't that a fact finding by
sure.
the court that we would have to give? It's different than just, oh, the court analyzed the precedent wrong, used the wrong standard of burden, but that it said it was revealed. And so don't we have to take that as a given, that it was revealed?
First of all, I don't believe any state court said that the defense knew that this deal had been struck. So if that's what the Supreme Court can be read to have said, then my response would be that however much the presumption is that that is a correct fact, if you look at the record of the trial transcript as well as the post-conviction hearing proceedings, we can show by clear and convincing evidence that that fact is wrong. But what I think, see, the Supreme Court said, even assuming that the assurances were made and undisclosed, they do not rise to a level of a materiality warranting Brady because of the other evidence. So it's not my reading of the state Supreme Court ruling or any state court ruling that there was ever any, that it was ever revealed that he had made this deal with regard to his son. And if it can be read that way, that's wrong.
But that he already had a deal. He was getting a manslaughter. All of that was revealed.
That was revealed. And the deal was revealed, and it was what it was. The problem with it was the jury was misled into believing that was the only deal, and as the prosecutor stated, that ain't no deal. He's 37. He's got a 40-year sentence. That's what the prosecutor argued to the jury. The jury was misled into believing there was nothing else. And if you read the post-conviction testimony, this man was desperately concerned about his 16 or 14-year-old son who drove there, according to his statement, who let his father out with gun in hand, who heard shots. The father comes back out crying, and they drive away. He has reason to be concerned about what could happen to his son. That was a father protecting his son. You can't get any better than that in motivation to lie. And the defense was denied it with respect to the key and only witness tying her to the state's theory that she manipulated this man into killing her husband for her own gain. You can't get much more material than that. You can't be that. This is a verdict that is totally, we should have no confidence in. And with respect to the Louisiana Supreme Court's analysis, it's just wrong under Kyle's. And therefore, you are not duty-bound to apply it, and you can grant habeas relief on this basis, consistent with your analysis of the Supreme Court jurisprudence in Tassin, which is almost totally on point.
Thank you, Ms. Hudspeth. You've saved time for rebuttal. Mr. Long.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, the appellant and appellee clearly have quite a different take on the factual basis of the case. The holding of the district court that is now on appeal was that Mr. Michael Bonnet, the attorney for Marilyn Robinson, said that he had received an impression that the son of his client, Rodney Robinson, would not be prosecuted. No court, either the United States District Court or the Louisiana Supreme Court, no court found that there was a deal with Rodney Robinson. The Louisiana Third Circuit is the only court that found that there was a Brady violation. The Louisiana Supreme Court reversed that, largely on materiality issues, but the so-called deal with Rodney Robinson was never has never at any stage of this proceeding been proven to have existed. The testimony at the post-conviction evidentiary hearing in the state court, the testimony from attorney Michael Bonnet is that he received an impression from DA investigator Danny Hall that Rodney Robinson would not be prosecuted. To the contrary, on May the 28th, 1998, the court will see in the record the guilty plea and the Boykinization of Marilyn Robinson. There is a plea form that was filed by his attorney, Michael Bonnet. In the plea form, he's asked, is this plea offered freely and voluntarily? Were you given any other promises, inducements, and so forth? To which he answered no. The trial judge then placed Marilyn Robinson under oath, and the trial judge asked him again, is your plea freely given, that the deal is that you will testify truthfully against Princess Lacaz? His attorney, Mr. Bonnet, interjected, and also, Your Honor, that this deal is contingent upon the fact that the state does prosecute Princess Lacaz, which the state did. But then the defendant was asked, or Robinson was asked, was he given any other promise or deal? And he said no. Then Mr. Michael Bonnet, the attorney for Marilyn Robinson, was placed under oath by the court and was asked the same questions as Marilyn Robinson had been asked during the Boykinization. Mr. Bonnet, in that discourse with the court, then said that this was a free and voluntary agreement and as to his client, Marilyn Robinson, and what that agreement was, and that there were no other inducements, promises, and so forth. Later, several years later, after the conviction had already been affirmed and had gone up to the Louisiana Supreme Court and had been affirmed, we get back to the state court on state post-conviction relief, and now all of a sudden Mr. Bonnet seems to have a different recollection. He seems to have a recollection that, well, I received an impression that Rodney Robinson would not have been prosecuted. Well, whether he received an impression or not, and whether that impression rises to the level of a deal, which the state contends it does not, that still does not implicate Brady. To implicate Brady, all three prongs need to be established. The first prong, of course, is that there was evidence. The second, that evidence was that it was evidence, impeachment evidence, or exculpatory evidence. The second, that evidence was withheld or suppressed. And the third, that it was material. Your Honors, I respectfully suggest that even the first prong of Brady was never met. It's never been established that there was evidence. Evidence of what? Evidence is something that seems to point to an operative fact, to something that would be of some significance. There is never any implication whatsoever that Rodney Robinson, the juvenile, committed any crime. He'd never been arrested for anything. He was never at jeopardy for anything. And so while the state contends that there was no deal, there never was a deal, even assuming that the district attorney investigator, even assuming that he had made some assurance to Michael Bonnet, which, by the way, the investigator denied in his testimony at the evidentiary hearing, even if that had happened, it still does not rise to the level of evidence to even get to the first prong of Brady. Furthermore, and I think it's very significant to point this out, because this was never mentioned in either the district court opinion or the Louisiana Supreme Court opinion, during this May 1998 Boykinization of Marilyn Robinson, part of taking a guilty plea is that the trial judge is going to ask the district attorney, is there sufficient evidence? And the prosecuting attorney at that time, Van Kaiser, then went into the evidence, a summary that appears in the Boykinization transcript that's in the record, goes into a summary of the evidence. And he goes into the fact that Rodney Robinson was, in fact, driving the car that day. Now, Michael Bonnet's standing right there. So if there's any revelation that any involvement by Rodney Robinson was never disclosed, it was disclosed right there in the Boykinization. The prosecutor then goes on to relate the evidence. He relates the statement given by the appellant, Princess Lacaz, in which she implicates herself in knowing that the murder was going to take place that day, that she spoke with Marilyn Robinson by telephone that morning, that this was the day, that in her and even in her trial testimony that's reflected. That she made arrangements not to come back to the house until 7:30 p.m. Also in her statement, she makes arrangements to make sure that Mike Lacaz's children from a previous marriage don't come to visit that weekend. All of this information is provided to the jury as well. And all of this information was related very, very early in the case. To say that Marilyn Robinson was the only witness or essentially the only witness against the defendant or the appellant in this matter is simply not accurate. The appellant's own statement, the appellant's own testimony at the trial implicating herself was certainly sufficient to show her knowledge and involvement and planning in what happened to be a second-degree murder. I don't know what else to call it but planning, where she called, talked to Marilyn Robinson on the telephone. This is the day. Yes, this is the day. Okay, it's going to happen tonight. All right, I'll plan to be away until about 7:30. Is that okay? Sure. All right, I won't come back to the house. If that's not active involvement in the murder, I don't know what is. So that testimony was provided to the jury in addition to anything Marilyn Robinson testified to. Further, the testimony of Simon Sarpy the appellant bragged to him about, I'll never be caught because the gun's been dismantled and thrown in the river and so forth. This is all cumulative. And so even if the court were to be able to get past first prong of Brady, that this was even, that the Rodney Robinson matter was even evidence, which I strongly disagree with, even if the court were to be able to get to the second prong, that this was somehow suppressed or withheld when there's no evidence of that in the record, then even if the court were to finally be able to get to the third prong, materiality, then all of this cumulative evidence that comes in from Princess Lacaz's own statement, from Simon Sarpy's statement, from the statements of the investigators, the evidence that was recovered, all this is cumulative of and proving guilt of the defendant, the appellant, Princess Lacaz.
Mr. Long.
Yes, Judge Wiener.
All that said, the Louisiana Supreme Court said this, quote, the undisclosed revelation that the state's main witness, Lacaz, former extramarital lover, sought protection for his young son, from criminal charges arising out of the same incident before he made a statement to police was relevant to the witness's credibility as a possible motive for his testimony as a state witness at trial. Then, despite having said that, which is right on materiality, the court somehow comes up with it didn't rise to the level of materiality because agreement to plead manslaughter for a lesser sentence was revealed. Well, that's directly the point. Pleading manslaughter is fine, but when you add to it that it was based on a deal, that seems classic material Brady to me. So how was the Supreme Court not making a wrong interpretation, a legal one?
2 points, Judge Wiener. First, I think all of the additional evidence that came in certainly has bearing on the materiality prong of Brady. Secondly, I think on that particular finding, the Louisiana Supreme Court got it wrong. I think they based that upon Michael Bonnet's testimony in the post-conviction relief hearing. When the Supreme Court made that ruling, that was in reversing the Louisiana Third Circuit Court of Appeal when the Third Circuit had granted the state post-conviction relief application, and I believe that that testimony, that finding was largely based upon the testimony of Michael Bonnet. The court, neither the Louisiana Supreme Court nor the Louisiana Third Circuit, neither court ever went back to the actual transcript and looked at the Boykinization hearing that Mr. Bonnet, not only did his client testify under oath that there were no other deals, promises, or inducements, Michael Bonnet himself, the lawyer, testified under oath that there were no other promises, deals, or inducements.
So you want us to disregard that finding? And under what standard would you have to meet for us to do that?
Judge Elrod, I think the court can accept the reasoning of the Louisiana Supreme Court on the materiality issue. The court obviously made no finding about the testimony of Michael Bonnet. That's my argument as to what I think happened.
But it looks like it took up the finding in the third court, that it took it up and said this is undisclosed, that he had this concern and it was relevant.
Well, the
the court did determine that, didn't it?
I really don't know, because the United States District Court in the magistrate's report and recommendations found that Mr. Bonnet had an impression was the wording that was used in the district court opinion. I just don't think that it rises to the level of a deal. If the court is going to give deference,
it doesn't have to be a deal, completed deal that's honored in order for it to be relevant that should have been disclosed, does it?
I think 2 points on that. I think that whether it's described as a deal or not, was there anything to disclose? I think is the larger question. Was there anything to disclose? There seems to be conflicting testimony in the record as to exactly what was discussed.
Well, the 10th Circuit, 10th District Court, that got it on remand, said that there had been no written deal, but Robinson did in fact voice his concern at the investigative stage, the case about his son being prosecuted, and did receive information from investigators that his son was not a target. But then it went to this totality of the evidence. So there's a lot of smoke around this gun about what was done, and
Judge Wiener, I think
surely should have been something that told the prosecutors that, with full knowledge of Brady, that we tell them this. If there's nothing to it, there's nothing to it.
I think as far as the smoke around the gun is that this matter, as all criminal cases, went on for some time before it actually went to trial, and all of the parties involved knew, would have known, that Rodney Robinson had never been prosecuted, even indicted, even charged, arrested. And so I think it is really a revelation to us all on the appellee side that this would even be an issue at this stage of the proceedings. There was no deal. There was never a deal. And Rodney Robinson, there was never any implication by any of the by either Marilyn Robinson or Princess Lacaze that Rodney Robinson was guilty of anything.
But there's no question that his father was concerned because he drove him there, he waited for him, he saw him come out with a gun and crying, as you've said. And why doesn't this trigger at least an investigation into whether there was a deal?
Judge Wiener, I believe the state district judge in the state post-conviction proceeding found that there was no deal. That was investigated at that level. When a post-conviction defendant, and so many of these cases go up through the court system, some even without an evidentiary hearing. So when there's a case that actually did have a full evidentiary hearing that was actually held, I believe, on two different occasions, if I'm not mistaken, then all of this information, whatever information there was, certainly could have been or should have been fleshed out at that time. And I think if there was some smoking gun, that it would have been much more evident in the evidentiary hearing where all parties had an opportunity to come in and present witnesses and testify.
All right, thank you, Mr. Long.
Thank you.
Ms. Hudson, you've saved time for rebuttal.
Just briefly, I think that it's clear from both the state post-conviction record as well as trial record, as well as when you look at the findings of the state courts that Judge Wiener has pointed out, that the state courts, as well as the federal district court, concluded, and the record fully supports, that Mr. Robinson did not agree to cooperate and testify against Princess Lacaze until he was given an assurance that his son, who drove him there, heard the gunshots, saw him come out with a gun crying, and then drove him away, and was certainly possibly susceptible to being prosecuted for, if not a principal, an accessory to murder, that his son would not be involved and that anything Mr. Robinson said or did would not be used against his son. There's really no question of that circumstance. And that is classic Brady material, given that Mr. Robinson was the key witness who tied Miss Lacaze to what was needed to make it a second-degree murder. What she testified that she knew was that her husband wanted to die, and he was going to figure out a way to die rather than live on dialysis after being this rough and tumble, bigger-than-life cowboy his whole life. And what she also gathered from talking to Mr. Robinson was that Mr. Robinson was going to do that for his friend. What the state's theory of second-degree murder was, that she manipulated Mr. Robinson into killing Mike Lacaze for her own gain. And the thing that the Supreme Court missed, besides interpreting everything in the worst in favor of the government as if it's a sufficiency test, which it's not, is they didn't even acknowledge all the evidence that was presented as to the state of Mr. Lacaze's health, and that other people besides Miss Lacaze voiced that he had said that he didn't want to live this way. And Ms. LaCaz herself even said, even though he told her all these things about how he was going to die and she was taken care of and he loved her and she can go on with her life without him, and he didn't want to live this way, she wasn't even convinced that he would do it. You have to believe her and not believe Mr. Robinson to make that assessment. The jury did not have critical evidence, classic Brady, to judge, and we can have no confidence to judge who to believe, and so we can have no confidence in this jury verdict.
All right, thank you, Ms. Hudsmith. Your case is under submission. Last case for the day, In re Katrina Canal Breaches.